ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
Is text 23 up there?
Yes.
23, okay. Reading in Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 4, Chapter 13, Descendants of Dhruva Maharaj, text number 23. I'm going to do 24 today also, do two texts. So text 23. Navadyeya.
Navadyeya.
Praja palaha prajabhir aghavan api yad asau lokapalanam bhivarti ojaha svatejasa navajaya praja pala
navajaya praja pala
Prajabhiraghavannapi
Yadasau
lokapalanam
Vibhartyo
yasvatejasa
Navadhyeya prajapala
Prajabhiraghavannapi Yadasau lokapalanam Vibhartyo jasvatejasa Navadyeya prajapala Prajabhiraghavannapi Yadasau lokapalanam Vibhartyo jasvatejasa
Na
never
avadyeyah
to be insulted
Prajapala
the king Prajabihi
by the citizens
Aggavan
ever sinful
Api
even though
yet
because
Asau
he
Lokapalanam
of many kings
Bibarti
maintains
Ojaha
prowess
Satejasa
by personal influence.
Translation: it is the duty of all citizens in a state
never to insult the king,
even though
he sometimes appears
to have done something
very sinful.
Because of
his prowess,
the king is
always more influential
than all other
ruling chiefs.
Srila Prabhupada's
purport.
According to Vedic civilization,
the king is supposed
to be
the representative
of the Supreme
Personality of
Godhead.
He is called
Nara
Narayana,
indicating
that Narayana,
the Supreme
Personality of
Godhead,
appears in
human society
as the king.
It is
etiquette
that neither
a Brahmana
nor a Kshatriya
king
is ever
insulted
by the citizens.
Even though
a king
appears to be sinful,
the citizens
should not insult
him.
But in
the case of Vena,
it
appears that he was
cursed
by the
Naradevatas.
Therefore,
it was concluded
that
his sinful
activities
were very
grievous.
Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prastaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Samaniti Namane Namaste Sarasate Deve Gauravani Pacharani Nivishesha Sunyavari Paschachade Sitarani Om Gyanam Timaram Dasya Gananjana Shalakaya Chaksurun Viritam Jainam Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Vanshakalpatrubhyascha Kripasindubhyeva Chapatitanam Bhavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha. So Vidura is still inquiring from Maitreya Muni, who mentioned that King Vena was deposed by the Brahmanas by their curse. So this is such an extraordinary thing, because ordinary the policy is that the king is always, the position is respected. Even if the king has done something wrong, his position is respected because he has, because of what he represents. Two things: a king represents the whole country, is like a country personified. You'll see that in olden times, the king of a country would simply be addressed by the name of the country. We see that in Bhagavatam all the time. Kashi means the king of Kashi. Or if you look at Shakespeare's plays, the king of England is called just England. The king of France is called France. King of Burgundy is called Burgundy, like that. They just, this is the, so the ruler personified the whole country. So that was one representation, that one person, whatever he did, the whole country did it. But also represented God. Nara Narayana also applied to the king. He is the manifestation of the Lord in a human in human society. Among Nara means human beings, among human beings. That's he's supposed to represent God. This is Vedic culture. Actually, it's just natural. It's a setup by Krishna, that all those people who have any power over other people are naturally representatives of God. That's the way it's supposed to be. Because if you have power, it means somebody has given you power. You have authority, it means you've been authorized by somebody. What is the ultimate empowering or authorizing agent? Ultimately, it comes to Krishna, to the Supreme Lord. So in the nature of things, head of state is a representative of God. Brahmanas also have power, influence, they're representatives of God. So anyone who is a guru, who is a head of state, or any government authority actually, anyone who's a parent, a mother or a father, or even an elderly relative, uncles, aunts, and so on. Guru means any kind of teacher, actually. These are the people who are authorities for others. They are supposed to represent Krishna. And it's a fact that people get their idea or their impression of what God is like from their experience of authorities in the world, starting to when you're a child. You're a helpless child. The condition of childhood is that you are taken care of by others. You have no power. and other people take care of you. And then in the family, the authorities from which you learn everything, the parents, a little later on the teachers. So these are natural representatives of God. And people, when they hear about God, they get their idea of God from these people. This one reason, this is one of the, we have to look at the modern condition of atheism. When God disappears from view, this is a historic occurrence in Western civilization, made famous by Nietzsche, who said that, you know, famous statement that God is dead. But that was because he had seen, from his point of view, he had seen that actually what's called the great chain of being in history, it had collapsed. There was a notion running all throughout the West, as it does through everywhere, that reality, nature, was ordered in a hierarchical way. And we had this conception, it was also there in the West. So everything, and this, at the top of this chain, there was God. And then in Christianity, below that, angels. And the angels were ranked, they were in hierarchies. I don't remember the exact orders now, thrones, dominion, powers, cherubim, seraphim. There were like different names of nine ranks of angels, from the highest down to the lowest. And the angels, in Christian thinking, did many of the things that we attribute to demigods. They ran different parts of the material world. They supervised the parts of the material world. They were the angels. Then in human society, then there was the priest, there was the king, and everybody's also ranked. There were ranks of nobles right down, you know, from the king, and then below that there was the barons, the counts, the viscounts, I don't even know the rankings anymore of the nobility, but they had their different ranks. Knighthood, the knights. Then there were the commoners, and so on. The animal kingdom was also ranked. Who's the king of the beasts? The lion. Everybody knew the lion was the king of the beasts. And so the animals were also ranked. What's the highest metal? Well, it was gold. There were also even minerals were ranked. This was conversed. So there's this idea, this the great chain of being coming down from heaven, and this whole social order was part of a cosmic order, starting with God on top and down the bottom to base, unformed, chaotic matter. And there were degrees of being. The closer you got to perfection, the more and more like you were close to God. When the idea of whatever happened, this chain of being collapsed. So it wasn't just that people became atheistic, but along with that, the whole hierarchy of existence collapsed. Authority, the idea of authority, of people being natural authorities, that collapsed. It's still collapsing. It's still collapsing. But this is so it's more than just a change in somebody's idea of what made the world or where it came from. It's a whole way of looking at the universe. It's a kind of a catastrophe in people's minds that this had fallen. This had fallen down. So, Nietzsche, in one of his works, he talks about the citizens. We're now in the 19th century. They're going to church. They're still going through the forms of worship. And he's saying, don't you see? Not only is God dead, he said, but you have murdered him. You've murdered him. You don't really in your hearts believe him because the whole idea of what God was, the whole universe, has disappeared, but you're still carrying on as if it's still there. You don't even know what you've done. You've committed this incredible crime. You're not even worthy of it. And he said, your churches, they're just a tomb where God is buried. Like that. And there's truth to what he was saying. There's truth, this whole hierarchical. And it is considered hierarchy is, by the way, the root of this word in English, hierarchy, comes from two Greek words. One is hieros, which means holy. Like we say hieroglyphics, the sacred writing of the Egyptians called hieroglyphics. So hieros, which means sacred or holy, and arche, which means order. Anarchy, no order, arche. Archaeology, going back. Order and origin also. Arche refers to the origin from which all order comes. So this holy order. This was the meaning of the word hierarchy. And in intellectual circles now, hierarchy is a no-no. It's bad. It's considered evil. The feminists really jumped on this one, because part of the natural hierarchy idea was that men were higher than the women. So the feminists have really jumped on that one. And they say that hierarchy is a male idea. I don't know how that's true. In the barnyard, when there are lots of hens, they develop something called a pecking order. So the hens rank themselves in status, one down the other. And apparently this is not done by the roosters to them. They do it among themselves. I think that it goes deeper than a male idea. But anyway, it's not a fashionable idea. So it was that in the Vedic conception, a person was to be respected because of where they stood in the hierarchy. Because they represented something. They represented really God in the whole order of reality. And their role was assigned to them, and they were supposed to do it. And so when sometimes, as happens in the world, they did something that was wrong or bad, you did not immediately say, oh, this is an evil person, let's give you, or disrespect him. You, because of this position, he was respected. Even though I may have done something abominable. When the system was working, people would take care of it. The right people would deal with the right persons, and very quietly, they would deal with the misdeed, but still the person's position was respected because of what he represented, because of the whole social order was necessary. Now, when this is done today, it's called a cover-up. But still in India, there's a big thing that goes on in our movement now, because the American thing is get it all out in the open. Like, for example, in a family, if the father is he's an alcoholic, Well, in a hierarchical society, his brothers or something, they try to deal with it, they keep him away from the bottle, but nobody ever announces to everybody, our father is a drunk. We don't go on television, Jerry Springer show or one of these television shows, and talk about it in front of the whole nation. In a hierarchical society, he's the father, his position should be respected, even though he's not actually fulfilling the, and if he's doing damage, then we'll find some way to correct him or something like that, but it doesn't become like a big thing in public. It's done very quietly. This is a traditional Indian way of doing things. Because it's still somewhat more of a hierarchical society than in the West. And so people behave one way toward authority, where in America and places like that, you don't respect that at all. You get it all out in the open, and if somebody tries to keep it quiet, it's called a cover-up. It's almost one of the words, and it's described, we think it in the West, we think it of as a kind of hypocrisy. It's a kind of hypocrisy. But it actually is appropriate in a hierarchical society that the position of a person would be respected even if the person was not entirely respectable. So this is what Prabhupada is talking about here. It's very hard for people to imagine this who are growing up in the modern world. India will also become more and more like America. This is Kali Yuga. The great chain of being is still in the last days of collapse. What happened in Europe is now going to happen all over the world in traditional societies that remain. Because all the traditional societies, they all had the idea of this great chain of being. It was a standard human conception. But now it's collapsing, and we have really anarchy as far as morality goes, or human society. It's all the doctrine is of relativism. There isn't any absolute. Everything that we are, what we believe, who people are, it's all made up by us. And we just concoct it as we go along. This is the modern condition. This has been described in this way. All that is solid melts into the air. There's a book by that title describing modernism. I think actually it's, I don't know where it comes from. Marx or some Marxist or something. All that is solid melts into the air. And so people are living under conditions of radical uncertainty as to their role in life, their identity, and so on. So this is... So you can see that Prabhupada's mission is to really... If you understand what Bhagavatam is, he wants to restore... By bringing Bhagavatam, by making brahmanas, he really wants to restore this we call it Vedic culture, but it was there all over the world in some degree or another, with the idea of the absolute truth and the great chain of being, people actually representing God. But once the chain starts to collapse, people lose authority. See, if someone has authority, you have to say, where do they get authority from? And there has to be some authorizing agent. Just like we can be standing on the street corner and a policeman can come and tell us to do something, get off of the street. And he has authority. We have to obey him. Anybody else walks up and says, gets off the street, we look and say, who are you to tell us to get off the street? But if the policeman comes, he has his badge, he has his signs of authority, we obey him because he has authority. Where did, who authorized him? Well, there's a government. There's a government. Ultimately, there's a whole layers of civil service or bureaucracy. And then finally, there's the government. Now, our modern conception of democracy is, well, who authorized the government? Given all of this power to these certain people. And they say, well, the people authorized the government. Okay, who authorized the people? Well, at that point nobody can say anything. We don't think that the people require any authorization. They're just there, that's all. It's just this idea. But in the Vedic conception, there is a self-authorizing authorizer of all others. Ultimately, if you actually follow back, when you say the people, it's just arbitrary. But if you actually follow back a chain of authority, you have to come to some final authority who doesn't require to be authorized by anybody else, the self-authorized, but the authorizer of all others. That is the conception of God, or the absolute truth. This people do not have anymore. So everything is cut loose. Everything is cut loose. People are authorities simply because they claim to be. They claim to be. People have power just because they've seized it. The famous saying, I guess by Mao Zedong, political power comes from the barrel of a gun. Or might makes right. These kinds of slogans. This is the modern world. So what Prabhupada is saying is something to us that is now very much out of favor. But as this great experiment of modernism keeps on going, we shall see what will come of it. People are certainly committed to it. I think that by our preaching, we are not going to turn around a huge number of people. I mean, there's just so much, there's so much momentum of so much history that people are still following out the consequences of modernism. The anti-modernist reactions that we see are worse. They are worse. I mean to say, you know, like various forms of fundamentalisms, fanaticism of various kinds. The Port Yeats, when he described the situation in the modern world, things fall apart, the center cannot hold, mere anarchy is loosed upon the world. And so in that poem he says, the worst are full of passionate intensity, and the best lack all conviction. So the people that are maybe thoughtful and thinkers, and they just simply have no convictions whatsoever. They've thought about it and they realize there's no foundation for any of our thinking, and so they simply have no convictions. The worst are full of passionate intensity. They find some cause, and because actually, in their hearts, they're nihilists. But to overcompensate for their total lack of faith, they become fanatics. That's what fanaticism is. Really, psychologically speaking, it's an overcompensation for a lack of faith. So when you see fanatics, even in our own Hare Krishna movement, you can see that this person has unacknowledged doubts and that they're compensating for just by being a fanatic. And they will not last. It will not last. So that's the modern condition. That's the modern condition. So you have things falling apart. You have various kinds of attempts to make substitutes for the old rules. I think communism is one, fascism is another. Now various forms of fundamentalisms, Christian fundamentalism, Islamic fundamentalism, so on. These are all these attempts. The only attempt that I've seen that to me is authentic is what Prabhupada has given us. I cannot myself go with modernism. I've seen where it's leading. I can see the future. Something will have to, it'll come to an end. It'll self-destruct out of, from its own excesses. What's going to replace it? I don't know the timeline, with 20 years or 100 years. I mean, there's a lot of collapse in a civilization. It takes a while, but it's collapsing. What's going to replace it? That's what Prabhupada has actually come to give an alternative. That's actually coming down to us from the preserved, a tradition that's been preserved. And by the power of the process of chanting the Hare Krishna mantra, it's able to be reinstated at a practical level. At least that's our effort. People have doubts, how successful will we be? Can we really create brahmanas? We've seen so many mistakes, our movements made already. I'm not particularly discouraged by these, actually. I think it's a difficult thing which we're trying to do, and it will take some time. The Hare Krishna movement's only been going on for what, 30 years? A little over 30 years. That's not very long. That's very long. It took Christianity 400 years before it became established. So we're a little impatient. Maybe things are speeded up now a little bit, but 30 years is still not a long time. Any questions about this topic? Well, he had his hand up. You just talk. No. Yogendra gets to go first because he's senior. That's hierarchical, right? Okay.
The collapse of the great chain of being, was that simply the influence of the age?
Huh?
The cause of the collapse of the great chain of being.
You know, it's hard to say what the cause is. I mean, there's a book by this, by Professor Lovejoy, one of the founders of what's called the history of ideas. And the book is called The Great Chain of Being. And he traces out the collapse, which began in the 18th century. And the collapse had a structure, actually. It wasn't, what he describes is what happened. It was the temporalization of the chain. In other words, here's a hierarchy with God at the top and dead matter at the bottom and all life forms ordered like this. It became temporalized. In other words, here this is an ontological dimension going up to God. God disappears. It's like a stick that falls on its side. It becomes, and this happened, you can trace back, this idea happened in people's consciousness before there was actually a philosophy to explain it. That is the temporal chain. And that was the theory of evolution. That now it's a temporal hierarchy. And we start off with matter and then we get various life forms. And the life forms are all ordered. I mean, evolution was actually a doctrine of progress. It was progressive, it had a direction. So that humans are higher than apes. You know, apes are higher than this. And then when you got up to the current human level, the way Darwin was originally applied was called what they call social Darwinism. That those people who were on top and controlled things in human society, not because they inherited it, but because they were fitter. So this,
Gunaya karma.
Huh?
Gunaya karma.
Well, maybe, or maybe they just exploited other people or whatever, because it became an excuse in Victorian time for a huge amount of social injustice. Well, they didn't have the idea of guna and karma. They just had the idea whoever had money or power, that person was fitter. But then the idea that the human race was evolving further and further, would go further to higher and higher realms. Then you had Nietzsche's idea of the Superman. Also, in tied with this in the early part of this century was the last century was eugenics, which was big in America too. So that we want to improve the race, and so people with bad genes should not be allowed to reproduce. So in America there was a policy like this that only genetically elevated people should reproduce, and those who are definitely mentally ill or retarded should not be allowed to reproduce. And so in America they tended to sterilize these people. In Germany they just started killing them. I mean, the whole Nazi thing was basically one big eugenics experiment, because they had decided what the next evolution was going to be. It was going to be the perfect Aryan, what they thought was the Aryan type, blonde hair, blue eyes, and that there was certain bad genes, mostly carried by Jewish people, that had to be eliminated. They were polluting the human race. But they started with mentally ill people, I mean, gassing them. And people who were not just mentally ill, but also crippled from, you know, had birth defects and things like that. They would just kill them off, gas them. Well, first they gave them shots, and that became a little tedious, and then they just decided to use carbon monoxide and try to do it. Clear out these hospitals for chronically invalid people, mentally ill people, and so on. This was the form, original form, that this great chain of being to improve the human race. Now biologists have a hard time, because now the idea of hierarchy is gone. They see that the whole evolutionary doctrine was based on a notion of progress. Now they can't find any reason to say one thing is better than another, and so now the whole doctrine of evolution is being rewritten to say that there isn't any. It's not progress at all. It's not higher and lower forms of life and stuff like that. I don't follow this stuff much anymore, but it's... anyway, that's what happened. It just... And the only... What I can describe it as, from my point of view, when I consider this collapse of the great chain of being, and it wasn't... You see, the theory of evolution, it didn't produce it. The theory of evolution was produced by it. Right. The collapse started earlier. People had ideas of evolution before there was actually any kind of science for it. It was just an idea in the air. But anyway, the reason to me what it is, if you look at the collapse that way, where it goes from this direction on a ontological direction from say best to worst or good and bad or something like that, degrees of being. It was actually an idea of there are degrees of being, to a temporal thing, on a temporal dimension, from a vertical to a horizontal. To me, what it looks like is as though the standard of the whole civilization went from mode of goodness more into the mode of passion. It's a shift from thinking in the mode of goodness to thinking in the mode of passion. And what comes after that? That's already, see, they're chopping it up now, and there's no progress, there's no direction, we're all just sort of milling around purposely. This is, there are no values, there's no nothing. Now it's the mode of ignorance is next.
Can I interject?
Yeah.
This is a very interesting topic, because it's something I spent some time over
over a few years, moaning about, is a change from a hierarchical system to a more matrix system in society. I like to call it a matrix system rather than being judgmental about the truth, better or truth worth. And I think the root cause of this change was the Industrial Revolution, because prior to that, you have the aristocracy, who have a lot of leisure time, and then you have basically the peasants, which is a large amount of the population who were involved in subsistence farming. So these people are working 12, 13, 14 hours a day. They have very little time for, you know, to get educated or to pick up skills other than farming, which is why the intellect of society was concentrated in the hands of the aristocracy and maybe a few intellectuals. But with the advent of industrialization and with the shooting up of productivity, all of a sudden you have people working less, getting more. So you have an increase in leisure time, sociologically. So you have more and more people going to school, going to college, because they have the time to do so. So suddenly the gene pool of intellectuals started increasing. I mean, if Nietzsche was born 100 years prior to when he was born, then we would never have heard of him, because he would have been too busy farming to be that. So once that happens, you have so many people who are involved intellectually in society, and the hierarchical structure falls, because now everybody is involved in thinking what is good, what is God, who's the country, is the king really good for the country, questioning the king, increasing transparency. I'm not sure that's a bad thing. I think it is a form of chaos that is leading to a different form of order. I think the understanding of God is changing, but I don't think that God is dead. I think transparency, my personal opinion is transparency is better for society than opacity. But I just think that eggs have been broken, so to speak. I mean, like, politically incorrect here. And the omelet is in the process of being made. And we shouldn't think that this chaos will lead nowhere, because you may be aware that all order comes out of chaos. So without chaos, you can't have a change in order.
Give me a break.
This is true. It's a philosophical truism that you have to have.
Look, well, one thing is just from a material point of view, the Industrial Revolution is not a cause, it's an effect. Because this was happening before the Industrial Revolution. It's one of the things it produced was the Industrial Revolution. So it was going on before. Well, the collapse of hierarchical society began, you can trace it back to the beginning of the Renaissance, practically speaking. So it's a much more profound event than what you've presented. The second thing is that as far as the causes of the Industrial Revolution, so much research has gone into this thing, you know. Max Weber dedicated his whole life to try to figure out why an Industrial Revolution happened in the West and not anywhere else. I do not think that we want to go back, or we can go back, to the Middle Ages. I don't want to deindustrialize society in the sense of, there were the original protesters of the Industrial Revolution called the Luddites, people who saw their whole way of life was being destroyed by machines. Laws were passed to make force people to leave the land and herd themselves into the cities, and where they would work as factories. At the beginning, they didn't have any leisure time. Who had the leisure time was the bourgeoisie, the vices, not the they were working 12, 14 hours a day, had machineries and child labor and everything. It took a while before there was something to ameliorate their condition. But it did. It set loose a very good thing, which was social mobility, because the hierarchical society had become frozen. So you had Vainas all over the place. He wasn't an exception to the rule. They were the rule. Bad Ludwig of Bavaria, you know, with his big castles, and the kings were just terrible. And it was all because it was solely based on heredity. But that had happened before the Industrial Revolution. During the Middle Ages, I guess social mobility, about the only place you could have a low birth and go high was in the church. The church would bring people up. Although a lot of the big positions in the church were also the possession of large noble families. One son would. Second sons, third sons, they become cardinals. That was just the position they took. Of course, they had mistresses and things like that because they had no real calling to spiritual life, but they had a power and prestige in that way, and they were like princes. But anyway, there was social mobility in the church like that. The Industrial Revolution and transparency, I don't think the lack of transparency or the remnants of the hierarchical civilization that we can still see are certainly in a corrupt form. It does become a cover-up. It does become a cover-up because people are not corrected. It's not being dealt with properly. But, you know, to some extent, it's a good idea that, like, it's not, if you know, an 8-year-old child's mother is doing something wrong, having an affair, maybe it's not a good idea to tell the child that your mother's a prostitute. Nowadays, the children, you know,
they
I don't think they can deal with it. I think they're screwed up like crazy when they're not protected. I don't think they can deal with it. Well, they deal with it all right, but what happens to the... Anyway, you're crazy. I mean, how can you think that with all this leisure time, what are people doing with their leisure time?
What do they do with their leisure time?
They go to see, not only movies are a passe, now they sit in front of things playing video games like crazy.
That's just a young...
That's these young now. What do you think? Watch those young within 30 years. They're still going to be doing it.
There was a theory, and I can't remember what it was about. A sociologist who said that the Industrial Revolution was basically precipitated by the black of the plague in Europe. Because that created such a shortage of manpower.
Look. Let's just don't go on like this. There's so many theories.
Yeah,
you're a real speculator. You love this stuff. But you're just spinning around in circles,
no,
you know?
I mean, you can't really say that modern progress is a bad thing.
I'm not saying it's bad. What I'm saying...
lends itself to certain abuse.
It does. But it's better when it's done. What we want to do is we'd like to do it correctly. What you've got now to correct the abuses, your cure is going to be worse than the disease, guaranteed. Guaranteed. The cure, unless somebody comes along, like us. Because the philosophy of Krishna consciousness is not that we reject the things of the world. You see, this talk I'm giving right now, see, it's got, I mean, this is the product of the Industrial Revolution. I'm not rejecting it. We don't reject modern management techniques. But what we do reject is those things which are not favorable for the service of God. So there's a principle of selection. So you should imagine, for example, what about an automobile industry that was in the mode of goodness?
Okay, how would that work?
How would it work? Certainly, you would make an automobile that would last for 200 years. We're perfectly capable of doing it. And maybe you would have your, you know, four basic vehicles. You'd have your sedan, you'd have your van, you'd have your truck, maybe a one-person run-around car. You'd have four basic vehicles. All the parts would be interchangeable. They wouldn't have to change every day. You know, what is this huge numbers of automobiles being built? They last for 2 or 3 years, then huge numbers of automobiles being destroyed. All that building is the mode of passion, all that destruction is the mode of ignorance, and how much mode of goodness is there? Mode of goodness is you make something, it lasts. No matter, everybody says they don't make things like they used to, because they used to make things that were made to last. So you could actually make an automobile, it's perfectly within our technical competence, that would run for hundreds of years, that would be very little maintenance, and that could be fixed by the average housewife with a wrench and a screwdriver.
Like the ambassador?
Yeah, you could. The ambassador is a very good idea.
The ambassador takes up more gasoline than a Cadillac.
I'm sure it can be improved, but the principle is you can really make things to last, but that is not a value. So if you imagine the automobile industry in the mode of goodness, and there's no reason you have to change your style all the time. Everybody has to come out with new cars every year. Well, think about it. Then people say, what about all the unemployment that would ensue, right? What are people going to do with their time? I'll tell you what they're going to do with the time. They're going to go to Rathyatras, and they're going to chant Hare Krishna, and they're going to read Srimad Bhagavatam. We'll give them something to do with their time. Boy, this is a big topic. I was going to go on to the next verse, but we didn't make it, so we'll do that tomorrow.
Are you going to give class tomorrow?
Yeah, I'll give class tomorrow. Then I'm flying out while the whole condition is in orange alert. I'm flying out of New York. Should be interesting experience. To Los Angeles, which is another target city for to change planes. Yeah, I'll give class tomorrow. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.